Accession number 32510, Reel 3.
Joe Reynolds, Reel 3.
Well, just before we took off, I was told that what they thought were low, were drainage ditches around these small fields in Sicily, where we were going, were in fact stone walls, which made a lot of difference when you're landing a glider. However, we took off.
What were you in? What glider were you in?
Well, I was in a Wacko glider, of course. I was way down the line in priority. And I think I was one of the, probably one of the last gliders to take off, being Tail End Charlie anyway. We flew at about 400 feet across the Mediterranean to avoid detection. And when we approached the coast of Sicily, although they'd done a fair job on the Big Ack-Ack, they couldn't stop the locals, because the flaming onions and things came up. And I saw the, from the Dakota, I was sitting behind the pilots, I saw from Dakota a light flashing. And I said to the pilot, "They're signalling to you," because there was no radio connection, of course, then from the other cable. And he said, "Can you read it?" And I said, "Yes." And it said, "Cast off or I'll cast you off." And immediately he heard it, he banged the lever, released us, and we shot up in the air. Because if you were cast off with the rope on the glider, you went straight down the water, of course. There's nothing you can do about it. And in fact, I think of the 130-odd gliders, 96 never got to Sicily. One landed in Italy, actually, one of ours. The bloke got back through our lines when we joined, when we got there. But we, anyway, we landed, and mercifully, we just, I think we may have just slightly bumped a stone wall, but it just simply was nothing. It didn't stop if we hit it at all. And then I got them together, my platoon, and immediately I had an argument with Lieutenant Colonel Walsh, who wanted to go cross country to the bridge. And I said, "My orders are to go by the most direct route, sir, and that's the road, and I'm going up the road, and we shan't get lost. It'll be easier marching altogether."
Had you landed in where you thought you were going to land?
I had the faintest idea where I landed. Not the faintest idea. I didn't know where I was supposed to land, even. Tell you the truth, my briefing was so poor. Anyway, we got the main road. I got my lot together and we bypassed a strong point, which we could well leave behind. We didn't want to get involved in that. And an Italian, home guard bloke, I suppose, big fat man on the bicycle. I pulled our chaps into the ditch, came puffing up and rode past. I said, "Let him go. He's going home to his mother and his wife. God, say, what good does it do to kill that man?" So anyway, we did run into some opposition, and I lost several people.
What was the form of the opposition that you ran into?
Oh, strong points, which we didn't get involved in, because I didn't have force likely enough to take a strong point. But I did eventually arrive at the bridge, and I left him with us, glider, and landed right in the corner of a field where it was attended. The RAF towed him, of course. They'd taken the bridge, and with the chap they had with them, they'd got the mines disarmed. Then more people arrived, and I was sent out on the extreme right flank, very near a strong point, but down the edge of the canal. And then the Sicily started, but they had artillery and the battalion. We had 40, 50 men, if that's 60 maps. Anyway, they gave a hell of a bashing. We had a lot of casualties. There'd been casualties in taking the bridge, incidentally, that a few dead Italians lying around.
What was the terrain like around the bridge?
It was flat. It was, in fact, an area forbidden to the Italian army for manoeuvres because of the mosquitoes. So it wasn't a healthy area. But anyway, we had this battle went on. And I mean, the biggest weapon I have is a 2-inch mortar, which our chaps used to fire from the hip. It was that powerful. But eventually, I mean, we were losing a lot of men, but just by shellfire, and a little bit of small arms, but they were advancing well behind their barrage. I sent my batman back over to the other side for safety. He's a married man, and you know, I thought, well, this ain't going to last too long. Unfortunately, on crossing the bridge, he and the chap with him, the bridge had a very near miss, and it killed them both. But meantime, what was left, I was left with, the main force withdrew what they had from the bridge, and I got a message down by runner to surrender to avoid the wounded being lying, or our wounded lying on the banks being shot to pieces. So we did it. The first chap stood up with a white flag on the pole and got shot dead. And then my brain gunner did it, and he still had the white flag when he died that he'd taken with him. And we were disarmed. We dumped our weapons, of course, first in the canal, and then we were marched off.
Who had the opposition been at that stage? Was it Italian or German?
No, it was thank God, it was Italian. It was only Italian. The Germans had withdrawn further north. They met them later on. But I was marched off with these chaps, and then we were marched to go back to Syracuse. But we were marching along, and we were suddenly ambushed by a very advanced British patrol. The Italians put up a slight fight, but it was nothing really. I remember one chap got hit. I saw him stagger, and I rushed forward to pull him out of. He says, "All right, sir, it hit the belt buckle." And it did. 2-2, I suppose. Anyway, they were overpowered, what was left of them. And we took their weapons, and my lot were laying down true British style, thinking now it's time for a fag. I was going to go back and take the bridge because they could reset the mines. So we crept back and got fairly close, and with a lot of lurid South Staffordshire oaths and screams and First World War Italian rifles we were armed with. I was armed with a Second World War one. But we retook the bridge and nonchalantly handed it over when the advanced British patrols came up. Except my brain gun and moaning like hell, because he had to go back in the canal in his underpants and collect his weapons and been dumped in there, and pushing aside, as he said, his wonderful account he wrote of dead bodies. And that it's far the most accurate account written of that battle. It was written to this Dutchman junior in Holland, who knew all about our battalion completely, and that was it, that the account. And it was quite incredible. I mean, you can read it later, but it was quite an amazing thing. Anyway, we went back to after the battle, and we handed it over. We went back to Syracuse, where we raided a Italian quartermaster's stores, because particularly my shorts, were all smothered in blood and in dreadful state, and boots were in a bad state too, in exchange for some very comfortable Italian army boots and a pair of their rather natty short shorts, which were, being too Italian style, were shorter than theirs. And we stayed there for a few days, and then we flew back to North Africa to our units. I went on a route march, British shorts of course, rubbed my sunburn that I'd had, and I had a blister, it must have been 9 inches long. I got whipped into hospital, but they were very worried about gangrene. And I mean, they treated me, but they had very little to treat you with in those days. There was no penicillin. M&B, I think, was about the only thing they could mention. Anyway, my leg got worse, and they'd done what they could in the way of treating it, but it was looking very bad. And that evening, two absolutely delightful army nurses came in with a bottle of white sparkling wine and said, there might be problems, did I want to leave any messages or notes that they would pass on? And we had two glasses of sparkling white wine in lieu of champagne, which they used to give them, of course. Next morning, the doctor looked at me as much as say, you shouldn't be alive. And they took the dressing off, and the whole lot peeled off as clean as a whistle. And there it was. 2 days later, I went in to have it treated, and the medical orderly, there was a lovely soothing white cream they used to put on. There was also a white cream you put on boils to draw them. He put the wrong one on, my raw wound. I think I would have killed him if I caught him, but he's shot out of there. I looked up his records, he'd been a gardener's boy. I thought, well, yeah. But anyway, I rejoined the unit, and we prepared to invade Italy.
Could I just ask a little bit about, obviously, the battle that you were engaged in? Once you'd taken up positions, were you, during that whole period, then just subjected to shellfire from Italian artillery, or was it mortars as well?
I don't remember mortars there, where I was, but there may have been mortars, but we had the artillery shelling, and long-range infantry fire too. It was a ridiculous position to be in, really, because we had nowhere to go.
And you had no means, really, to retaliate at those ranges, did you?
Well, I say, the biggest thing was a 2-inch mortar fired from the hip. I was armed with a 3/8 pistol, which is a very, very efficient weapon at long range. You can wreak havoc. Which I eventually gave to my batman when he was crossing the bridge. He could pick up weapons the other side of the bridge, you see, and he left me a Sten gun. And one of the jobs they had to do was recover my 3/8 pistol from his dead body. But it was just... We had very little we could retaliate with that was of any sense at all.
And that was through the loss of most of the battalion, really, and the gliders that didn't make
Yes, I suppose. But I think that they expected to land a much bigger force to keep the enemy further away from the bridge. But it all went wrong. And, we had... I don't know whether we took any anti-tank guns with us then, because they're a bit of a menace in those gliders. They're at the back, and if they broke loose when you landed, they go through the glider and take your body with them. So they weren't to be recommended. But no, we had no heavy weapons at all.
And the advanced British patrols, were they, can you remember which kind of units they were from, were they?
I got an idea, the very first advanced one might have been SAS. Or Mountbatten's boys, or whatever they were called in those days.
Combined operations.
Yeah, or something like that. But I thought the next lot that came up were the North Hants, but somebody told me they weren't, but that's all I remember of them. I just wanted to get out and get some kip, and get a decent meal.
So essentially you'd achieved your objective, though? That
we did, to all intents and purposes. The fact we'd taken the bridge, lost and retaken it, was never mentioned in the battalion records, ever. And I got an MC there, but it was never mentioned in my citation at all.
So it was just the capture of the bridge that was...
That's all it was. And whether it was honour of the brigade or the battalion or what, I don't know. But I do know one thing, that the brigadier's batman pointed me out to the brigadier when they were standing at Syracuse, we were marching past, and said that was the one who was this. So, but... No, it was remarkable. I never worried about it, but it did strike me as being slightly inaccurate, to say the least.
But to all intents and purposes, it was successful with a much smaller force than was intended.
It was a minute force. Absolutely, and it was successful through a sheer fluke of meeting a patrol. The whole thing was a series of remarkable... incidents that came together in the right way for us, and so I never let on to those forces. The weapons we were cleaning were Italian. First World War.
What kit and uniform had you gone on the operation to Sicily with? Because you mentioned your revolver, but...
I can show you the uniform. It was in khaki. I went in boots and puttees, which were, well, stockings really, rather than puttees, with an anklet puttee around the ankle to make sure, but the rest of it were stockings, and khaki shorts, a webbing belt, and a jacket with two top pockets and two big other pockets in, again, khaki twill uniform, a lanyard to show which company you're with, and your beret, or if you're going to action, your helmet, which I seem to remember I carried my beret, I didn't wear my helmet. A lot of people opted for that because they were very uncomfortable and it was very hot. But that was unofficial. But that was the uniform, and it was the same uniform that we wore to Italy, of course.
Did you do any kind of other training prior to going to Italy?
Yes, I did, because my platoon was never reformed, and I took over the first mortar platoon. There were two mortar platoons. Mine consisted of 52 men altogether, the biggest platoon in the camp in the battalion. You had six mortars and three hand carts per mortar. It was all foot, and the hand carts would carry the mortars and all the ammunition. And so you had 18 hand carts and 52 men. The second one, which I didn't get, which Withers, the other chap who did well in Sicily, got, he got an MC. He had six jeeps and trailers with mortars. Very, very nice too. But I didn't. I got the dirty end of the stick. And what's more, I got all the thickos to pull the handcarts. I had bright NCOs and good number ones on the mortar and that sort of thing, but the chaps who did the pulling and shoving were discards from all the other companies. Give them to Reynolds. They can pull his handcarts.
What's the size of a mortar crew?
Three.
And what are the roles that they take?
Well, one loads, and one passing loading the ammunition, and when he loads it, it fires automatically when it drops down. There's a number one guiding the thing, and a chap on the site, I think, if I remember rightly now. But anyway, we had some remarkable things on training with our mortars when we got back to England, but I'll tell you about those. But when North Africa, I emerged with a fully trained platoon, and we had all our stuff. We landed at Taranto. We went across on the old Penelope, the light cruiser, known as the Pepper Box, because she'd been hit so many times. The Abdul in front of us was a fast mine layer. She went hit a mine and went down with 650 worst fusiliers, I think they were on board. Little gentleman with a tab at the back there. And after we secured Taranto, we spent two or three days dragging the bodies ashore. I never read a thing about that, ever, in any record.
That was in the harbour at Taranto, was it?
Yes. But anyway, we landed there, and we were up against, it was the 1st German Parachute Division, who were a Luftwaffe, of course, but who were retreating in line with the western side of Italy. In other words, they couldn't be caught short ahead of the people on the other side. So our main job was, occasionally they hit back spitefully, I thought, but their main job was to keep in touch and do that.
So were you advancing on foot during this period?
Oh, yes. We only had one brain gun carrier as our entire armour. That was a useless thing. We had jeeps, of course, but I wasn't one of the favoured. No, we slogged along the whole time on foot. And I remember on one occasion, we'd halted, and the colonel, for some reason, put my six mortars out in front of the battalion, three sides of a footpath, leading to a small river, and then up to a hill, with no infantry screen in front. I had nobody in front of me, so I could either fight my mortars or fight the enemy, but... and you're told, you know, you mustn't lose your mortars, sort of thing, all that sort of caper. Well, I was on duty, and I heard this sound of these voices, and it was the German reconnaissance patrol. It was twilight, and they couldn't see us, because we were backing onto a wood. And I let them through, because they were a reconnaissance patrol, and I wasn't going to reveal them where I was. And they went down, and I heard the sound of a bang, bang, crash, crash in the background, and they came up against the advance outposts of the battalion, who were half a mile back down the line, you know. And then they came back, laughing and talking, and I let them go back, because I knew if one had got back, we'd have had all hell descending on us. And I mentioned this in the morning, when we were relieved, and the colonel was mildly surprised I had engaged them. And I said, but my first duty was to defend my mortars, not to attack the enemy. I leave that to infantry, of which I had no screen. That didn't help, that remark. But anyway, that was all. Eventually we got up, quite a long way up Italy, but before we got to Cassino, and we were relieved to come back to for the North Europe operation.
So at that stage, really, the Germans were just retreating and just occasionally making a line.
They were retreating in line. If the other one of the others held, they both did. But they stood at firm at Cassino for a long time. Very nasty.
How did you get back to the UK?
We came back on the Duchess of a big 23,000 tonner made for the St. Lawrence, flat bottomed. But coming back, I was up on deck and I saw we'd hoisted two black balls on the mast. So I went to the colonel, I said, they've hoisted a signal. He said, what was it? I said, that means steering out of control. Because I knew from coast defence, you see. Sure enough, we hit the Monica Bermuda. Only the steering wasn't completely out of control, but using the engines, they just a glancing blow. Monica Bermuda just out from Gibraltar. And she had to be put back. I bet they were pleased. But we limped home, all right. We got back to Liverpool, I suppose it was, anyway. And went down to Bulford, and then...
When was that, Jack, roughly? Was that late 43 or early 44 you got back?
I'm talking about late 43. We got back to England, autumn.
Did you have any thoughts on why you'd return to England?
We knew that there was enough talk to know that there was going to be something happening. We were going to attack Calais, of course, was the favourite thing. Must have been mad. But anyway, we got back to Bulford, and I was sent up in the advance party, good old Reynolds again, you see, to take over in Lincolnshire. And I went into the adjutant's office. He wasn't there, but there was a map open on the table. I was with a sergeant and couple of drivers. I hastily rolled the map up. I didn't even look at it. But I thought, God, that could easily be, because they were going down south to take part in the infantry battalion. And anyway, I reported to brigade headquarters. And they kept me under close sort of watch for a few days, just to make sure. I asked them to, because I wasn't going to be held responsible. for any leak. You don't know, do you? And everyone was very security conscious then about this whole business. It might have been nothing. It might have been a map of Salisbury Plain for all I know. But I didn't know. But anyway.
So this was part of a long, almost long build-up, was it? But everybody knew what was going to happen.
Well, everybody knew something had to happen. I mean, because all the American troops down south, things were being done. I didn't know about Mulberry and those things, but they were being built along the south coast.
Did you think that you might be part of this at this stage?
We thought we were going to D-Day, yes. But the 6th Airborne did that. We were actually, allegedly, on standby to fly in the Cherbourg area to land to create a diversion so the Yanks could get going. Well, it could have been that we were right off a division, I don't know. But, I mean, we landed behind the German lines. We wouldn't have had a lot of hope. But still, it didn't happen. It was one of those rumours that go around, or it may be in fact, I don't know.
So did you start, though, again in a training routine again?
Yes.
At that stage?
Oh, yes. And the boy, it was very near Coningsby, where they did the dam buses, right? And they took me up. We used to drink at a pub in Sleaford. And they used to sit the pongos, as they called us, in the front gunner's position. We flew below the level of the fir trees, the big evergreens. We turned a little dinghy over in the wash with our, the wash from our battalion. We flew over the wash. And I was determined not to do anything. And it came out and I sort of, with as jaunty air as I could, I stepped out of the plane and said, yeah, it was rather fine, but I can't stand high altitudes. They grinned and we went in the mess and had a drink. But yes, they flew a lot of their missions from Lincolnshire. We did our training up there. We just kept on doing all the training we had to for an operation.
Had you been issued with transport, though, at this stage, or is it still going to be that you were...
Oh, no, I was always put... And there's a picture of my platoon in Arnhem. It says... But it must have been mine by the number of handcarts. I don't know if I had that lot. But... No, I was never mechanised, and we flogged on with our training till, including some training we did down in Barnstable.
What did that involve?
A bit of cliff climbing. Just indication of what you might have to do, you know, that sort of thing. And it was there that the guards were on training. And they used to march the guards in three deep long lines, and fire live ammunition in front of them. And the line got out of line at the end, and they lost several.
Is it that throughout all army training there is always a certain number of casualties
that occur? Oh, yes. We had an enormous number of casualties in our training with live ammunition all over the... Yorkshire Moors. We used to train wading in the streams and firing live ammunition over your head, because firecrackers are not the same. You've got to... Although we did have a major who used to rush around with firecrackers saying, on, remember Hong Kong, it could have been your sister. What this was supposed to mean, I don't know. It never really dawned on me, but I guess she wasn't Chinese. It must have been white. Basically, our training was fairly tough. We did 40-mile route marches, things like that.
How would you have when you did a 40-mile route march, would you have a specific time to do it in and a distance to cover and a kit to wear?
And dig in at the end, put the tanks over you. No, you didn't have a particular time, but you knew where the cookhouse was. That was the other end. You know, they got on in front. And but we carried usual packs. My lots, lugging their mortar trucks along. But we did quite a lot of... I think there was a test. We did 72 miles in 24 hours. We're 3 miles an hour, which is not as bad as it sounds, because, I mean, well, when you do a run march, you can do 6 or 7 or 8 miles, 7 miles an hour at least, and then you go rest. But it was... as my friend said, teasing work.
And I take it then the level of fitness in the battalion was particularly high, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good. That I will say, it was good. Well, it had to be. Although there was a considerable amount of alcohol consumed, they sweated it out on them. You know, and a lot of cigarettes consumed, of course. But it didn't seem to have any effect on their ability to handle their weapons and do their route marches. And we used to do these run marches and take everybody for ordinary runs. So they call it jogging now, I suppose. And all that sort of thing. Yes, yeah, so there was an accent on physical fitness. We had a sergeant, PT sergeant, who was with us to instruct on that sort of thing as well. So it was taken seriously. Well, it had to be because more mechanised ones got away with it. The transport company, for instance, they were particularly, rather slightly, tend to be soft. But the rifle battalions and the my platoon, anything that didn't have jeeps,